This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Drew Daywalt, author of the crayon books for kids. Titles are The Day the Crayons Quit and this year's The Day the Crayons Came Home. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
I'll never look at crayons in the same way. Your book showed me every crayon needs a place to call home.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was the reason I wrote the second book, The Day the Crayons Came Home. It was inspired by my parents. I grew up in the Midwest. Mom was a nurse at an ER. Dad was a fireman, and they were rescue workers. And, you know, sometimes they would bring stray dogs home and stray people home, and they were always helping somebody. And I thought, I would love to apply that sort of universal sense of home and homecoming and keeping your doors open to people who need you into this book. That was really the impetus for writing it.
Do you have a favorite crayon color?
You know, when I was a kid, I did. I was big on blue. You know, the original book, blue is teeny tiny. It's a little stub. Can't even see over the railing in the crayon box. Because the thing that inspired me to write the book was I had, in my 30s, I was a grown-up, and I had a box of crayons on my desk. And I thought, God, everybody loves crayons. Yeah, so blue at the time. My new favorite is pink. I've learned that pink is not just for girls.
Well, before the crayon books, you were an American screenwriter, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you still are. Mm-hmm. Best known for your work on horror movies. Is that good preparation for writing children's books?
I love that question. I was asked it by my friends, too. I grew up, like I said, in Ohio, and I grew up in a home that was, I think, 7 bedrooms with servants' quarters, 5,000 square feet. It was built in 1834. And it was originally a stagecoach stop. It was a stop, it had a huge basement that was like a dungeon, and Harriet Tubman would bring people through when she was taking them to the north and to Canada. The house had this amazing history, but it had remained empty from 1910 to 1960 when my parents bought the house, cheap, because it was abandoned. It looked like the Munsters or the Addams family lived there. And when they bought it, no one would talk about why the house had been empty so long. So I grew up in a haunted house. It was the Amityville of, like, Northeast Ohio. It was great. While it terrified me, it also titillated me. I was like, oh, wait, there could be more than what we're seeing to the world. And I think that, along with the movie Star Wars in 1977, set me down this path of fantasy worlds. And that's one of the reasons I think that I have this weird two-sided coin to me, where it's children's books on one side and then scary stories on the other.
Well, speaking of fantasy, you described how the second book came to be. How did the first book?
Well, the first book was The Box of Crayons.
A talking crayon?
Well, yeah, it's a thing, you know. When I went to college in Boston at Emerson, and my mentor was an author named Jack Antos, and he's always been my Obi-Wan Kenobi, my Merlin. As my professor and one of my faculty advisors at Emerson, every semester I was taking a creative writing. My major was creative writing and children's literature and screenwriting. So I thought, I'm going to take this degree and go work for Disney someday. And every semester he let me take the class and audit it. And he only would give out, he was such a tough teacher, 1 or 2 A's. And I always got one. And at the end of every semester, he's like, Drew, you need to go to New York, not Los Angeles. You need to get into children's publishing. Don't go to L.A. And I'm like, oh, come on. I want to be Quentin Tarantino. I don't want to be Dr. Seuss or Roald Dahl. And he's like, okay, fine. And he did that every semester. And I did move to L.A. And I had a movie in 2002 not do so well. I was really frustrated with Hollywood. And I sat down to write the first crayon book. I was like, you know, I'm going to write something that my kids can actually enjoy. And I'm going to... I don't know what to write about, though. And there was this box of crayons sitting on my desk. And I thought, oh, you know what? Everybody likes crayons. So I poured them out on the desk and just looked at them and thought, well, if they had a voice, because I wrote so much dialogue in the 90s as a screenwriter, I'll give them a voice, because that's my strong point in writing. So there were these monologues about how they just chewed this kid out for how his coloring choices. You know, blue was really short, so it was used a lot. Pink wasn't used at all, so you're being prejudiced. And
what about peach? Wasn't that the one that...
Peach was actually naked. I actually have that peach crayon still, and it's one of those kids at schools will ask me, why did you peel the wrapper off? And I'm like, I don't know. It's one of those nervous moments. I'm like, do you guys doodle, or do you ever tear the wrapper off of something when you're not even thinking? And they were like, yeah. And I'm like... That's what I did. But when I personified Peach, I wasn't just pulling a crayon out that didn't have a wrapper. I was like looking at a naked person. So that was part of that.
How do you and the illustrator Oliver Jeffers work together? I mean, do you do the words first and then he does fiction?
Yeah, well, the story behind the publication of the first book, it was a blind date. The publishers will buy manuscripts and, you know, and when you're new and a nobody, which I was just a new person coming in with a manuscript, they pair you up with someone, and a year later they send you the book. And you don't have anything to do with anything, because usually your editor chooses you as the text, and then you work on the text until the editor's happy. And when they're happy, they send it to the illustrator, who spends a year or so painting and drawing and getting these things right, and then all the layout and all that. So we didn't meet until the book was done at a cocktail party in New York City. At the launch party of the book, we met each other. Yeah. But we became friends, so in book two, you know, the editor's nightmare is, hey, the illustrator and the author become friends and they want to work together. So now we're a two-headed dragon. It's harder for everybody to manage, but at the same time, it was incredibly fun on the second book because Oliver and I collaborated entirely. It was great. Sometimes I would draw something, I'd doodle something and send it to him, and he would rewrite text and send it back. So it was a much more organic and amorphic relationship, you know, back and forth.
How do you create crayon conflict?
Well, when I go to schools and talk to the little kids, I teach them the word personification. And it's so funny. As soon as you make an object a person, it's got a problem. We're such a flawed species. And then if you put two of them in a room, they're going to have a problem with each other, even if they're the best of friends. Orange and yellow specifically are, in the book, arguing over who gets to be the color of the sun. So when I was taking those crayons out on the desk that day, one of the things I wanted to do is change people's minds about color, especially children, because they're so inundated with blue's for boys and pink is for girls and, you know, black is for, you know, the bad guy with the black cowboy hat and Darth Vader. And I wanted to switch that around a lot and give them new meanings. And I was thinking, what are the two angriest colors I can think of? And it's usually like purple and dark red, or, you know, black that's been scribbled real hard. And, you know, when you see orange and yellow, you think lemons and sunshine, and it's a positive emotional experience. But I thought, well, then what are they going to fight over after I make them dark colors, you know, emotionally? And I was like, well, they could argue over who gets to be the color of the sun, because every kid seems to color one yellow and one orange. And that universal experience, I think, tapped into some zeitgeist with the kids and with adults, because they color the same way we did. You know, it doesn't matter how old you are, you usually take those colors. And I thought maybe it would be an American culture thing, like, well, we see red one way, but maybe in England they see red a different way and their children color different. They don't. It's a human experience. The book has been translated, I think, into 18 languages, and it's done really well across the world, because just as human beings, we have very specific emotions tied to colors.
What's next?
Oh, I have a couple things. I've written a novel. My dog is keeping a diary. It's a middle grade, so it's for like ages 8, 9 to 11, 12 maybe. My dog keeps a diary about what an idiot I am. He ends up solving crime. He's sort of a Peter Sellers type of character. And that's my first middle grade. It's my first novel. It's my first middle grade novel for kids. So I try to summon my inner Roald Dahl for that one.
Is that a new pathway? Or in the end, you have lots of pathways.
I have the strangest career path you can imagine. I've written for Disney TV. I've directed music videos. I've directed feature films, written feature films, worked in commercials for a while. It's like the feather in Forrest Gump. I've just been following the feather, and it's led me here. And I've never had so much fun or personal and professional success as I have with this. So, you know, Hollywood is tough, and I had up years and down years. And I worked with Quentin Tarantino's company, A Band Apart, and I've worked with Tony and Ridley Scott's company, Scott Free, and I've written big movies and little movies. And what I didn't know all that time is, you know, when I stumbled in Hollywood, I fell, and all these little tiny hands caught me, and it was children, and it's this book, and I feel like I owe them. I really do. Deeply in my heart, I feel like, all right, you know what? They're my audience, and I love kids, you know. One of my things on my bucket list is, when I get a little older, I actually want to be a mall Santa for a year. I think that would be so much fun, because I'm getting a little slice of that now. I walk into a bookstore and these kids look at me like I'm Willy Wonka, and there's just magic in their eyes, and I'm like, yes, that's what I want to give them. I want to give them that sense of magic. So, yeah, this is the world I want.
Well, thank you. My guest is Drew Daywalt, author of The Day the Crayons Came Home, published by Philomel Books. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.